Welcome. You are listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Materials or items read on AIRS LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted.
Today's articles are from the January-February edition 2025. A Visit with Dolly. The Queen of Country still has plenty of stories to tell. In the fall of 2023, I drove up to Nashville to record an episode of Biscuits and Jam, my podcast about Southern food, music, and culture with Dolly Parton. I'd interviewed her twice before, but never in person, so my heart rate was a little faster than usual. At the time, she had just released a new album called Rockstar, which consisted of 30 songs, including 9 originals. As if that weren't enough, she'd published a doorstopper of a book about her love of fashion with the cheeky title, Behind the Seams, My Life in Rhinestones. I don't usually get nervous around celebrities, but there was something about meeting Dolly that seemed different. In one sense, I felt like I knew her, because I've watched her movies and listened to her music for as long as I can remember. In another, it was a bit like going to see The Wizard of Oz. I pulled into a gated parking lot next to a nondescript building, pressed a buzzer at the door, and was let into a small waiting room. Before I could catch my breath, I was ushered back to the studio. "She's always on time," one of her handlers said, "and usually a little early." Then suddenly, she was there, wearing a glittery, hot pink ensemble and a big smile. She came right over, shook my hand, and made me feel as if I'd shown up at her front door. "I just love Southern living," she said. "What are we going to talk about?" Like a teenage fan, I handed her an orange Tennessee Volunteers hat and asked her to sign it, and she let out a big laugh that filled the room. "Of course I will," she said. Then we sat down for an interview that, despite the lights and cameras, felt like a conversation on her porch. We talked about Cathead Biscuits, songwriting, her husband Carl, her connection to Miley Cyrus, her imagination library, and singing Rocky Top at Knoxville's Neyland Stadium. She didn't have an ounce of pretense, and despite being one of the busiest people in the world, she acted like there was nowhere else she'd rather be. When I asked what it meant to her to be Southern, she replied, "Everything. I can't begin to imagine not being Southern. Can you?" This past fall, editor-at-large Rick Bragg returned to that same Nashville studio to ask her about a flurry of new projects, including plans to celebrate the 40th season of Dollywood. Rick may have been a little nervous, too, but she put him at ease right away, cracking jokes and talking about pickup trucks and pocket knives. As you'll read in his story on page 56, A Song in Her Heart, Dolly is still that girl who grew up dirt poor in the Smoky Mountains. But she's also the hardest working woman in show business. She doesn't slow down for much, but she did for Southern living, and for that, we're grateful. Sid Evans, Editor-in-Chief. A Song in Her Heart by Rick Bragg. Dolly Parton talks to Rick Bragg about her hometown, the real Jolene, and the music that keeps her going. The photo shoot in her private studio outside Nashville seems designed to capture Dolly Parton's Tennessee mountain heart. But a heart is a hard thing to get just right. The set, a kind of country road vibe, is carefully crafted and meticulously lit by people who know how. She is one of the most photographed performers on earth, so there are no amateurs here. Her staff, including a creative director, a set designer, a film crew, and a whole slew of hair, makeup, and wardrobe perfectionists, move through the studio with purpose, friendly, but with one eye always on the clock. There is a firm schedule. Time is her hobgoblin. In the middle of it all, with lights winking off the chrome sits a thing of rare and timeless beauty, a blue and white 1972 Ford F-100 pickup, framed by a little thicket of hauled-in shrubs and small trees. To make the scenes look a little more authentic, the set designer spreads around some dirt. Finally, another rare and timeless beauty steps into the frame. Dolly, in high heels and bejeweled denim, comes in smiling, warm and sparkling. Some people would say it's just the rhinestones that are hanging on for dear life, but I know it's more than that. The lights seem to love her. That's what the photographers say. I bet the sun and the moon do, too. Lord, I think she's even prettier than the truck. She poses against the Ford, and a veteran magazine photographer goes to work, shooting at a rapid-fire pace. On a screen nearby, the crew can see the images flash by in real time, each one more striking than the last. Her creative director sings out after every frame, "Pretty, very pretty, gorgeous, beautiful, stunning." As I watch from the wings, just one more goofy fan, I think of a line from The New Yorker about how she is loved for many reasons. The songwriting, the singing, the industry smarts, the cheeky cracks, the homey manner, the beauty, the verve, the hits. She is also loved for being loved, and loved transcendentally. I had to look up that last word. It means beyond common experience, thought, or belief. I reckon so. She will change outfits twice more, quickly, professionally. I don't know why, since she looks good standing in a mud hole, draped in an old tarp. And in the law, I think about the distance she has traveled from Sevier County to Nashville and wonder how much of it remains inside her, truly after so much fame and time. Then someone hands her a guitar. It is supposed to be another prop, but she cups her lacquered fingernails around its neck, strikes a chord, and unscripts it, and there in that trucked-in dirt, you know she hasn't forgotten a thing. Her voice, unlike any other, has ghosts and quivers in it and manages to haunt you and make you glad to be alive in the same beat. It's an old tune, echoing from a depression so deep that some people in these mountains just vanished inside. She could have picked another song, any of a thousand of her own hits that generations know by heart, but she chose one that her people sang over clotheslines, tobacco rows, and hogs pens. Over the borrowed ground they worked until one day they could afford their own. I'm going where the water tastes like wine. I'm going where the water tastes like wine. I'm going where the water tastes like wine. And I ain't gonna be treated this way. My daddy loved a blue truck, she says. And suddenly the schedule doesn't mean quite as much. Women told him, "Lee, that truck makes your eyes look so blue." So he always drove a blue one. She steals a few seconds more, remembering the Parton men were famous for their blue eyes. And that, right there, is the real shine of it. You don't need any rubbing or polishing for that. It's just the way we talk down here. If you grow up in a certain way. I may look artificial, she says after a while, but I'm totally real. She's not some Nashville whippersnapper from the suburbs, with a neck tattoo and a pierced lip, who's singing through her nose. She's lived her music. It isn't just an archive to draw from. When I was 5 or 6, I wrote a song about a corncob doll, she says. Mama wrote it down. She had a trunk full of them, and it's all sacred to me. At one point in the photo shoot, she slides into the pickup and leans her golden hair out the window. I had to get rich, she says, to live like I'm poor again. But she's getting back out. Her pants catch on the seat. It's hard to slide in rhinestones, she explains. Her story has been told so many times, you would think we could just settle on one, the best, and not fool with it anymore. She has won 10 Grammys, plus a Lifetime Achievement Award. She could use her platinum records for salad plates. Dolly's songs are the kind other superstars sing in the shower like, "I Will Always Love You," "Jolene," "Here You Come Again," "Two Doors Down," "Coat of Many Colors," and love is like a butterfly. She was in iconic films like Steel Magnolias and 9 to 5, harmonized with Linda Ronstadt and Emmylou Harris, and did a duet with Miss Piggy. She became a kind of Where's Waldo in popular culture. Everyone from drag queens in New York to sorority girls at the University of Alabama wants to be her. Not to mention, under the category of Who Knew, she was behind-the-scenes producer of the wildly popular Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Her image, the very idea of her, remains inescapable, appearing in storylines in movies like Urban Cowboy and Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse. Then, in 2023, she put out a rock album and covered, among other legends, the Rolling Stones. And just this fall, she released Smoky Mountain DNA, a return to the hollers and the back roads that shaped her life and music. It's kind of a reaffirmation, proving that no matter how much Hollywood tinsel piles up around her, she knows the way home. But even as she approaches her seventh decade in show business, she is still building her legacy with new songs and projects and a commitment to philanthropy that is never ending. Recently, she and her businesses donated $2 million to Appalachian residents who were devastated by the Hurricane Helene, putting her money where her heart is. "Those are my mountains," she says. "I just don't want to let these people down." Her great lasting project, Dollywood Theme Park, marks its 40th season this year and employs several thousand people with jobs they can build their lives around. Dolly Parton's Imagination Library partners with local affiliates to give free books to children around the world. She could hop on a high horse and say it is intended to fight the illiteracy that held down so many of her people. Instead, she just says she loves the idea of it, of a child on some country road walking to a mailbox to find a book, a treasure of their very own, addressed to them. So she made it real. "I just wanted to do good," she says. The fame paid for it all, but doesn't seem to torture her as it does so many other people who burn out or crumble. It just moves and slides around her the way a river does a rock. She has been married to the same man since, well, forever. She has never thrown a television off a hotel roof. If you can type her name into the internet, you get her secret to good coleslaw. It's pickle juice. Or her trick for making a perfect baked potato instead of a scandal. But maybe the most remarkable thing about this story is what some have described as her immunity. Her fame seems to be impervious to politics or class or any other snakes lurking in sociological rock piles. It would be a sin somehow to cast the first stone. If you ask if she is a feminist, she will tell you she is a woman who stands up for herself. When other songwriters sold the rights to their music, she refused, even turning down Elvis. Her empire is built on talent and beauty and backbone. No one can crack a joke about her she hasn't cracked herself. She hugs me when we meet. I blush for the first time in 40 years. "You're so little," I say suavely. "All but my boobs and my hair," she replies. Her laugh is like a bell. As I gather my wits, I remember why I came. If you ask her what she's most proud of, she retreats again into the mountains, into a house with no running water, but a constant stream of songs that are so sad you shudder when you sing them and weep as you listen. She was born in 1946, the fourth of 12 children. She can't remember a time without music. It was her daddy who put his shoulder to the land and made their living, but it was her mama, Avie Lee, and her mama's people who would rather pick and sing than work, who showed her it was music that chased the dust from your mouth. And maybe if you were any good, you could make a dollar singing about that hardship on the AM radio or the black and white TV. "My mama knew all the old songs brought over from the old world," she says. "They were, most of them, awfully sad. But being sad over a song is better than being sad in the real world. She would cry and we would love it. We'd say, "Mama, tell us again about that girl who loved that boy," Dolly says, recalling those about a boy who left home, or went to war, or sea, or perished in some terrible longing. Mama could jerk a tear out of you. They heard Knoxville Girl down in the Willow Garden, Little Rosewood Casket, and more. At night, the Parton children would sit with their mama and watch the radio. She says, like it would run out the door if they didn't hold it there with their gaze. Dolly was making up her own songs before she could even read and write. "I can claim that gift," she says. "Anybody can sing, but to make something good in the world that wasn't there before?" Her uncle, Bill Owens, encouraged her to take her talents to town, to radio and television. When she was just 10, she was singing on the Cass Walker Farm and Home Hour. Reflecting on that time, Dolly says, "From the way people reacted, I thought, you know, this may be for real." She was appearing on TV before her family had one in her house. When she was in her mid-20s, she wrote and recorded a song that would become a kind of anthem for working people, "Coat of Many Colors," which came out in 1971. It was a balm for anyone who was ever made fun of because of their poverty, and it exalted quietly and sweetly the people of the mountains, the farmers and the mill workers and the coal miners who would be her first great everlasting fans. "I recall a box of rags that someone gave us and how my mama put the rags to use. She made my coat of many colors that I was so proud of. If it happened," she says, "I wrote a song about it." The only way she could run out of songs was to stop living. This philosophy gave birth to one of the greatest country music or any genre hits of all time. It happened not long after her marriage to Carl Dean, an asphalt contractor. He went into a bank to ask for a loan for a paving machine. The red-headed bank clerk seemed to Dolly more than friendly. "I told him, 'I don't believe this long-legged, beautiful girl is who you ought to be talking to about asphalt.' And she might have warned him that if he kept it up, she would pave over his behind." In 1973, she went to RCA's Nashville studio to record "Jolene." "Your beauty is beyond compare, with flaming locks of auburn hair, with ivory skin and eyes of emerald green. Your smile is like a breath of spring. Your voice is soft like summer rain. And I cannot compete with you, Jolene." The clerk's name was not really Jolene. Dolly borrowed it from a little girl she saw at a performance. "I changed the names to protect the guilty," she says. And after all this time, the writing is still the best part. "I walk around with a song in my head and in my heart," Dolly says, adding that even in the calm of her home, there's always music running through her mind. "I'll go into a closet and wonder, now what in the hell did I come in here for? There's nothing that makes me happier than writing a song." She has a new album in mind. In a world that seems to be biting at itself like a runover snake, she would like to do something with hope in it, and faith, and even inspiration. She uses the word revival, and I think to myself, isn't that what you've been doing all along? Dolly knows exactly how far she's come. But there are moments, now and then, when she feels like she's playing dress-up in somebody else's clothes. "I think I'm a star to everybody but me," she says. "I always wanted to be famous, but nobody could have thought of the extent it became. I'll see a whole wall of my picture somewhere, and I'll wonder, how did that happen?" It's more a joy than a surprise. Right now, with the photo session and interviews almost over, she just needs to get out of those tight clothes. "I popped a zipper and they had to sew me in," she says. "They may have to cut me out. And just when I think I might get away from here with my dignity intact," she asks me with a laugh, "if I have a knife." "Is it a Barlow knife?" she says, falling backward into the holler. At Christmas, all the boys got a Barlow knife. And then she said something else after that. But then the blood had rushed to my ears. I couldn't get my heart out of my throat, and my notes made no sense to me the next day.
We have come to the end of our program. I'm Joyce Davis, and I will be back soon.